everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Creators in Cincy, and I have a very special guest with me today. Andy Gudgeon is here today. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming down and doing this.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't know anything about Andy, she is an actress, she is a model, and she is the owner of Apex 360, mm-hmm. right?
That's correct.
So let's kind of get things started with maybe a little James Lipton inside the actor's studio type question. What was kind of the calling force for you to want to be an actress? What kind of, and also, like, did you have anybody who you kind of looked up to growing up, kind of in the acting world?
I think it was just something that I was born with.
Really?
I always mm-hmm. wanted to be an actress. I would watch the award shows and get mm-hmm. dressed up, and I would put on skits for my family. God bless them.
And it's kind of forced, them every
just,
time.
You know, any kind of family.
To make them all sit down.
Family get-togethers. I had a pretty captive audience. So I was always into it. Early on, I think growing up in Indiana part of the time mm-hmm. was kind of desolate.
So you were originally from Indiana.
I'm originally from the west side of Cincinnati.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And in fifth grade, we moved to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was from Indiana, always wanted to live in the city, and my dad was from the city and wanted to live in mm-hmm. the country, so
right,
they kind
yeah.
of halfway through made that happen. And so I was a city girl, west sider, and all of a sudden thrown onto 7 acres in Indiana.
Right.
And mm-hmm. it was a big transition.
Sure,
so
yeah.
Thinking back, that's the time that I think my creative kicked in the most,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't have a sidewalk, and I didn't have a place to ride my bike and friends, so... you know, I was alone a lot, and so I started entertaining myself, I guess, so.
Did you have anybody that you, I always kind of like to ask if there was any, like, influences that people had to kind of want them to get into the, kind of wanted to get them into this career. Like, did you have anybody that you kind of looked up to that you wanted to kind of, not emulate, but people that kind of inspired you?
I wouldn't say that there was anyone nearby that, mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis, that inspired me.
Right.
But I remember early on dancing and performing to Michael Jackson albums over and over and
right.
over.
Mm-hmm.
Or Grease albums over
yes.
and over and over.
Yes.
You know, those classics. So
that's my favorite musical, by the way.
Mine
that's
too.
Hands down.
Yep.
Hands down.
I'm with you.
Yes.
So it's... early on, you know, I would dance and sing, and, mm-hmm. you know, we had hardwood floors and a really old house and slide across the floor and, you know, just always putting on shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember one time we get a phone call, and it was Barbizon Modeling Agency, and they had some kind of a promotion, and you can maybe meet Eric Estrada or something like that. Like, it was something
wow.
that was probably total, you know, total BS. But, oh, my gosh.
Do we want to explain to maybe the younger audiences who Eric Estrada is?
Maybe Google would
yeah,
just
Google,
be best
yeah,
to handle
because I'm
that.
Not sure, yeah.
You know, so yeah, he was something back in the day. So, definitely
right,
dating
maybe.
Myself. So, yeah, so, oh, my gosh, you know, the heavens opened. Like,
right.
there is a chance for me, and I remember being a little kid looking up at the moon and thinking, gosh, would someone just come and rescue me from here, you know, because I just, you know, had too much time on my hands. So then as I got older, I was never really someone who was afraid to take a chance. And as soon as I could drive, I moved back to the west side. And so then eventually just started living my little life and looking for opportunities
mm-hmm.
And got into it for a while. I got into the acting and modeling. And then I decided that I should probably do something where I could eat. And,
right.
You know, my grandmother, especially Hazel, she mm-hmm. wasn't super excited about, you know, not having stability.
Right.
So,
sure.
You know, I did the career thing and then mm-hmm. eventually started Apex 360.
Can you talk a little bit about what you do at Apex 360
sure.
for those of you that don't, for those that don't know or
yeah.
are aware of the company?
Absolutely. So consumer products brands, they sometimes need small quantities mm-hmm. of their products if they're going to change a design or add a new SKU or size. they want to use those small quantities to get them into the sales reps' hands
right.
so that they can secure shelf space for Target or Walmart or what have you.
Sure.
And then once they use those for the shelf space, then the national runs kick in where they do, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands. So we print and apply or put the package together for the small quantity consumer products SKUs that you see on shelf.
Awesome.
So it's cool.
And how long ago
fun.
Was that that you started that?
I started in 2004.
Oh, okay.
So it's been quite a while. I've got
it's a good like 15 years probably.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And a fantastic team. Like, shout out.
Ebook360.
But they are awesome. All my colleagues.
Awesome.
We're like a big family.
Very cool.
And so now the company's grown to the point where I can have a little bit more free time. So I started to get back into acting and modeling around.
So you didn't, like, from the time that you started Apex 360, you really had kind of not stopped acting, but you kind of, like, cooled down on it a little bit to, like, start the company?
Yeah. Well, when you have a company that you're starting from scratch and
there's
basically one employee, you are.
Yeah, I was about to say, how difficult is that when you're starting from scratch as one person?
It was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really hard. And, you know, eventually you are able to hire, you know, someone to help or someone to do production.
Is it one of those things where you, like, you're calling friends at first to, like, kind of say, like, hey, come and work for me for,
I did have some family come,
paid them
what I could. But, yeah, it was definitely, you know, hard startup, a lot of sleepless nights, you know, trying to make the best choices. And, you know, and I made a lot of mistakes, you know, but that was just part of the learning.
And how long was it before you kind of grew the company to be, like, in this really stable place? Like, how long did it kind of take from, like, scratch to where you are now?
15 years.
15 years? So just
and
recently.
Counting. And counting, yeah. You know, I'd say probably, well, I got back into the acting and modeling around, I think I went to my first workshop. It was a spur of the moment. I knew I kind of had this nagging that I wanted to get back into it, and I was in my robe with a Today Show coffee mug in my hand at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and I saw an Instagram post pop up, like an ad, for this acting workshop hosted by Kirk Baltz. I had no idea who he was, and it was in Clifton, and all I knew, it started at like 10 o'clock, and I thought, I want to be a part of that. I'm going to jump back in. So I called the number on the Instagram ad, and I left a message, and I said, hi, I'm not signed up, but I'd like to join. I hopped in the shower, and I showed up in Clifton. I was one of the first ones there. And finally, this guy walked in that kind of looked like he would be the instructor. And I just told him, I said, I haven't paid, and I haven't signed up, but here I am.
Right.
And so I basically beat him there. So that's how I jumped back into it.
And how did you kind of, when did you realize that this was Kirk Baltz? Which, for those of you that don't know, Kirk Baltz, if you are a Quentin Tarantino fan, he is the actor who got his ear cut off in Reservoir Dogs by Michael Madsen while he's singing the song. And when I actually first met you, you were talking to me about this, and I just really, you said, I was like, oh my God, Kirk Baltz.
I, like I said, I didn't even know who he was. You know, I just, you know, said, I'm not signed up for your class, but here I am. And he's like, who are you? And I guess he likes
Does he kind
that.
Of do workshops all around, or does he like?
He does them all around the globe.
Really. Oh, okay.
He has an actor's workshop intensive. He has some different websites and things like that. You can go on and look and see where he's going to be. But he's really expanded his program.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
So we're lucky enough that he comes to Cincinnati.
How often does he come to Cincinnati?
I'd say probably a couple times a year
now. Okay, cool.
And he was here, I believe it was the fall, and then he's coming this weekend.
Very cool,
so,
yeah.
We
were
so
just talking about this.
Back.
Yeah.
And But it's been a great experience. We've really grown in to be, you know, great friends over the years.
How long ago was it that you first met him and joined the workshop?
I want to say I think it was 2016.
Okay.
Because in 17 is when I really got a lot more involved.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of, you know, jumped back in 16. So.
Awesome. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So if you scroll through Andy's IMDb page, She has a lot of credits to her name. And she actually has a lot of credits that are in post-production right now. Mm-hmm. That you've had like, I'm just going to look it up. You've had like three or four different ones that are in either pre-production or post-production. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of share like any experiences that you've had like on a film set? Like any moments that kind of stick out to you or anyway?
Oh, gosh. Well, probably the most intense I can say was The Wager. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's on IMDb yet or not, but I played the role of a mother who was on drugs, who needed to give her baby away. Mm-hmm. She just had the baby, and it was a really, really intense scene. Basically cried real tears for 4 hours. So it was a lot, really emotional, really intense. And so I'm really anxious to see that one. I'm you know, excited to see it come out. Because when you do this, you film your part and, of course, you know, read the script. But until it actually comes together, that's like the moment that the magic really happens. Mm-hmm. I've done theater in the past. And, you know, when you're on stage, you can say the line that you hope, you know, brings a laugh or an applause or, you know, whatever that is. And you kind of get that immediate audience interaction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then at the end, of course, you get to take your bows and, you know, and hear the applause and the appreciation. But when you work on movies or film, there's a disconnect. And you don't really get that.
Because you're performing for people who are filming you.
You're performing for people who are filming you, and you're also performing your little piece that makes the magic come together. Mm-hmm. And you also don't typically get to sit with an audience in a theater to watch it on the screen to get that.
And also you're shooting things like out of order. You're filming this scene one day as opposed to theater. Right. You're doing it all. Yeah,
exactly. And you might not meet someone that you're in a movie with until a cast party, or you might never meet them, you know? So it's a different creative process.
Yeah. I've had a few people on who have been actors who have discussed the differences between theater and film, and they always say that, like, on film, you obviously get multiple takes to do things, obviously, but on film, you have, like, when the take that they use, that's the take that they use, and it's forever. But as a theater, you get multiple performances, and you get multiple kind of chances to do it right, and multiple, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's definitely different experiences, but personally,
which one do you prefer most? Do you like have one that you prefer over the other, or
you know where I'm at?
Or is it like
right
it's acting?
Now,
you know?
Now it's where I'm at right now. I was actually asked to be a part of a of a theater experience not too long ago, and just the time, it's very time consuming. There's so many rehearsals and there's so many performances, and it just was too. It's just too time consuming for me right now.
Sure.
So if I can, you know, the roles that I get in the films that I, you know, want to be a part of or get to be a part of, you know, it's easier to work into my schedule.
Right.
So for right now, but I do miss theater. It's, you know, kind of something that gets inside of your heart that it's.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just making such a.
Because some people prefer one over the other. Like some people are like, I just want to stay in the theater, be a theater actor, but others want to go to film. So, but then you have those people that do both. So
I appreciate them both. And I think both are good for learning.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But
did you do theater first?
I did.
Okay.
I did theater first, and then I got into...
Like plays when you were in high school and stuff like that?
Yeah, like plays, and actually I was never one of those theater kids in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really didn't get into it until afterwards, so college. You know?
Oh, okay.
And even then it was more like the, you know, just the miscellaneous theater groups around town. And, so, yeah, but eventually I'll get into something again, but for right now, you know, film and movies, it works out best with this.
So do you typically like work in and around Cincinnati? Is that typically where a lot of your production, like a lot of the films that you've worked on in Cincinnati, or do you typically will like travel out to somewhere else?
It depends on what it is. There are a lot of fantastic opportunities in the Cincinnati or the Tri-State area
Now. And it's grown like so much over these past years.
Film Cincinnati has been fantastic. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Opportunities in. I don't go after a ton of background work anymore, mm-hmm. but the background work that I've been on and the opportunities that they have brought has been fantastic.
Right.
I got to shoot a scene with Tim Robbins and Mark Ruffalo.
Was that the Dark Waters? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I haven't seen that yet, but I haven't seen it either. I've heard it's amazing. Someone reached out and told me that my scene was there.
Oh, awesome. That's yeah. Awesome.
So, you know, sometimes you shoot and... You know, then
you never it, you never wonder cut. If yeah.
so I my work was cut on a couple couple Cincinnati films here, but that's okay. Just having the experience,
sure, yeah,
getting to work mm-hmm. alongside mm-hmm. some great people. I worked next to Michael Chiklis in the Bruce Willis 10 Minutes Gone.
Oh, nice, very yeah, cool.
So you could kind of see cool. me run by at one point. Not the most fantastic shot for me, but it was great just being able to spend time with them. And
oh, sure.
I went to their wrap party.
Oh, awesome.
So I
very
got
cool.
to meet a lot of people. Mm-hmm. The furthest, I guess, I've gone is I shot Bad Boys 3, which is coming out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, right? So it was shot outside of Atlanta at a mansion outside of Atlanta.
Atlanta seems to be another place where mm-hmm. they film, too.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of opportunities for you mm-hmm. know, some of these yeah. cities. So, but we'll see. You know, that might get cut, but we recreated a Miami pool scene around a mansion outside oh, wow. of Atlanta. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
Did you by any chance work on the Ted Bundy film
I
with
didn't.
Zac Efron?
No, nope,
okay.
nope, I didn't.
Because I actually
on
worked
that
as
one.
A production assistant oh, on that did? Way back when, yeah.
And I did see it.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
yeah. Oh, gosh. It was really, really good.
Yeah. I just, yeah, I was just wondering if you worked on that.
No, no, mm-hmm. I didn't work on that one.
And Dark Waters, didn't that shot just this past year? Wasn't that long ago when they shot
quick.
That? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It came out really fast. So, and that's too, you know, even with all the indie filmmaking here in Cincinnati, it's mm-hmm. just amazing. And the different outlets that are available now. I just produced a movie over, couple months ago, I guess it was. And it was just a 48-hour film.
Oh, you're part of the 48-hour film festival?
Yep,
okay.
The 48-hour film festival. Mm-hmm. And we put that together. I was the lead in that. And we put that together, and we've been able to get that, you know, out on Amazon. So,
awesome.
Yeah, that's been fun. And there's just so many great distribution opportunities for
yes.
indie filmmakers
oh, yeah.
now
mm-hmm.
with Netflix and Amazon and, you know,
it's
even
so
just
much
YouTube.
Easier.
And
yeah.
Yeah, so it's a really
just, yeah,
exciting
or just, yeah,
time.
Just, you can just put up the film on YouTube
yeah.
yourself, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's fantastic.
Was that your first time producing?
That was my first time mm-hmm. producing, yeah. And we are actually brought that team together again and added some additional cast and crew members to take part in the winter film competition that's coming up here in Cincinnati.
Oh, right, yeah.
So mm-hmm. that kicks off in February 1st, and it's, you know, you get a month to film that one
yes.
versus 48
mm-hmm.
hours.
Yeah.
So it was a little nutty, the 48
yeah,
hour.
Well, the 48 hour, yeah, I mean, the 48 hour film for sure, you just like have so, it feels like so much a little time to do, but winter film, you get a whole month. So,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. But we're not going to, you know, we're not going to take advantage of the extra days as far as, you know, getting mm-hmm. too laxy-daisy. We're going to like, right. you know, still mm-hmm. get on it early and, but yeah, winter film is a fun experience for anyone
right.
looking
mm-hmm.
to, you know, create something. And it's mm-hmm. awesome to create and then see it come together so quickly and actually see the film.
Oh, yeah.
Like so many of these you shoot and I'll forget about them. You know, it might mm-hmm. be a year or two later before they come out. And
right.
then it's like,
right.
oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that one, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's great.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I'll be filming my third film with William Lee. He's a director in Dayton.
I saw that you were working on that.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's going to start filming, I believe, in March now. So William has been fantastic to
work
with.
Can you talk
with.
A little bit about that film?
Yeah.
Obviously, if you don't
you know,
want to give it away
yeah,
any kind of spoilers
talk a lot
or anything.
About
but
it,
yeah.
But
just a little bit of something for
I
our listeners.
I am a white ghetto, a human trafficking character. And so, you know, the everything's coming together. He's getting locations nailed down and the script is, you know, gone through a couple of small revisions, mm-hmm. but yeah, so we'll some of his films he actually shoots in some Cincinnati locations as well.
Okay. Is he primarily Ohio based?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, mm-hmm. In my experience, well, he to said this it was based point, on Dayton, with yeah. with shooting with William.
Okay.
But, yeah, so we'll see. You never know with him. He's creative genius, so he comes awesome. Out with some amazing mm-hmm. films.
Let's kind of go back a little bit and talk about your first experience producing.
Okay.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about like how you came to produce this short film that you did, and kind of like, was it something that you'd wanted to do for a while, was producing?
Yeah, it came together fast mm-hmm. because I was just looking to get on a team to, you know, be an actor.
Sure.
And then, you know, someone else contacted me and said, hey, are you on a team yet? And someone else said, hey, are you on a team yet? And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I'm looking for a fantastic team, you know, so finally I started looking around at all the people that were reaching out, and I thought, well, heck, we should pull our own team together.
That's, yeah.
So that's exactly what mm-hmm. we did. So then, you know, after we kind of got into it, someone was like, do you want to be the producer? And I thought, well, being a business owner, kind of having that entrepreneurial spirit,
sure. right.
I thought, well, yeah, that does kind of seem like it would be the next, you know, stage for me.
Right.
And, you know, again, there's so many outlets for people to get their work out there
mm-hmm.
that I thought, you know, instead of sitting around waiting for opportunities, I can go after them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I'll just
yeah.
create mm-hmm. some, you know.
That's what I always say, like, don't wait for someone to give you an opportunity.
Do not
wait. You always just have to go for it yourself. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's the best way to go about it.
So, you know, for the 48 mm-hmm. hour, I said yes, and you know, then all of a sudden sitting at the table as the producer was a little bit different. Right. I was like, what? Why am I here again? You know, so that was a little bit odd. But, you know, so I produced it.
So everybody comes to you with issues,
lead,
you know.
Yeah, and then I was thinking, oh, okay, this is, like, different.
And it's like, oh, wait, yeah, I'm mm-hmm. a producer now.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm a really firm believer in, you know, whatever I'm going to do, I'm not going to stay in my little tunnel. I'm going to try to learn everyone's
You seem like a very driven person.
I want to know yeah. everyone's jobs so that I can do the best at my piece.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can understand how sound works, if I can understand how the cameras work and the angles and in different shooting resolutions and lighting, and I can understand all the different pieces mm-hmm. you know, of everyone else's job
sure.
or position,
mm-hmm.
then I can do a better job at mine. Because it's a team at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. I try to surround myself with like-minded professionals who care about quality.
Right.
So that's mm-hmm. how I've built Apex 360, and that's how I'm trying to build my career here.
You know, so by this point, when you became a producer, you'd already had that background as a company owner for Apex 360, and you kind of just maybe apply some of those.
Sure.
Maybe apply some of those skills
yeah.
a little bit.
I think we're always learning. Right.
Sure. Oh, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
And even
yeah.
over the years, you yeah. know, having different bosses or different management styles or different, mm-hmm. you know, experiences, sometimes you say, oh, gosh, you know, they made me feel really valuable and I want to be like that someday
mm-hmm.
Or treat others that way sometimes. And sometimes you have an experience that's not so fantastic and you're like,
right.
oh, boy, mm-hmm. I'm going to remember that. Yeah. That's probably not the way that I want to handle my business eventually.
Yeah.
So I think that we're all just learning.
Oh, yeah,
every
absolutely.
Day.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and it's good stuff, you know?
Yeah. I always, you know, because you obviously have had experiences on both smaller sets and obviously the more mm-hmm. big budget sets
yeah.
on Dark Waters and Bad Boys 3 and all that.
Right.
I've just, you know, from experience, I've just learned that being on a smaller film set, you just get to know everybody more, right?
Sure.
You just, like, have a more kind of, you can develop more deeper friendships with people as opposed to, you know, if you're on a bigger set, you don't typically get to, like, because there's so much, you know, there's so many people involved, you don't typically get to, cause, and everybody's moving at such
mm-hmm.
a quick rate, you don't
yeah.
really get to sit down and kind of talk with people, but,
you know. Yeah, you know, I think
and the 48-hour film festival is, I feel, is perfect for that because you, like you said, you're working with about a handful of group of people and,
yeah. Yeah, well, and just like anything, like, you know, when you're at high school for the first time, it seems so big and overwhelming. And then all of a sudden, it gets smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. So I think that the film community here is the same way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then you start working with people on one set, and then all of a sudden, you're on another set, and then you're like, hey, you're here, you know. And
it's all the same people, you know, because a lot of the same people will work on the same different projects.
Exactly.
So.
Or, you know, I shared a lead with my daughter. Awesome. Yeah, it was really, really, really cool. And her name is Julia. And I have Kylie, Julia, and Ty. So you have all been mentioned. But Julia expressed interest for film, mm-hmm. and so there was an audition opportunity that I probably wouldn't have gone after it just for me, but it was for her as well. And she was a little older than what they were looking for, and I was very honest with them. And Josh Cockle, he's the one who directed that, and him and his wife, his wife Nora was there too, and she's just lovely, and their family was so wonderful to us. But he listened to our audition, and he's like, I got to tell you, I wanted someone younger, but you guys nailed it, and I want to have you. And so it was a lot of long days, nights, weekends, and it turned out great.
Awesome. Yeah. That's very cool. Yeah. And what was the name of that film?
Gifts.
Gifts?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Gifts. Yeah. And so it's neat, you know. And
was that kind of the first big thing that she worked on as an actress? Or
She had just done mostly like the plays at
high school plays and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then afterwards, she, you know, there were some other audition opportunities came along. And I'm like, hey, are you interested in this or that? And and she's like, I think I'm good for now. So I think, and then I was like, oh, no, was it too much? Because
it can be an overwhelming experience.
Heart. I mean,
yeah,
she really,
it can be.
And we filmed late into the night and in the woods.
Yeah,
and I mean, she would fall asleep and we'd have to wake her up and do a wardrobe change. So sometimes you look at these and you think, oh, gosh, that looks like so much fun. But it's a lot of work.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but anyway, actually, ironically, yesterday she said, you know, I think I'm ready to get back into it.
Mm-hmm.
So both of my girls were in the 48-hour film.
Oh, awesome.
So, but yeah, I was like, oh, really? So, yeah, so hopefully she's gonna get back in there.
That's very cool.
Oh, and I mentioned that I was working on this monologue.
That's right,
talk about a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a monologue workshop this weekend. And so I've been trying to perfect my monologue, and it's going to be the end of me. But
had you ever like been asked to do a lot of big monologues before? Or was this kind of like you say, you were more like?
I've done a couple monologues before, but it was just for maybe an audition or something.
Right.
So
right.
I just kind of went in and did it, and some of them I wrote. So
sometimes monologues can be intimidating too, because.
You know, I think. I just respect the words of the writer.
Oh, sure.
So when I wrote it, I was like, you know, it's mine. And so this one is not.
Right.
So I'm like, yes, that word is important. And, you know, I probably put a lot of extra pressure on myself, too.
Right.
But, so yeah, my sheets are all tattered and coffee stained and in a mess. I've been carrying these dirty papers around with me for a week and a half now, but.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's neat, you know, to
that's
bring
awesome.
A piece to life and to make it your
and
own.
That's awesome that your daughters are actually wanting to get more into acting. And how long ago was Gifts? How long ago did you film that?
Oh gosh, I guess that was about 2 years ago.
Oh okay,
maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a trailer out there. On YouTube.
Okay.
And the cover is on my IMDb page.
Right.
And then what I do on my Instagram is I try to, when I get cast in something, I try to put the cover of it on my Instagram.
Right.
And my Instagram is Andy Gudgeon _actor. So what I try to do is I put that on there and make an announcement that I was cast.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I kind of use it as a little history, way to watch my timelines. So sure, right. I started doing that from the very beginning. It's been pretty effective, so mm-hmm. it's on there too.
Have you ever had an experience where you film, where you'll film, work on a film, and you'll end up seeing it, and you might think, oh, well, maybe that didn't come out in the way that I was hoping.
Yeah, I think every time.
Oh, like maybe like when you're in and filming it, you're thinking, oh, okay, this is really good. But then you see it and you're like, not you. You don't have to name any names or anything like that. But like maybe like you see a film and you go, oh, okay, yeah, that happened.
Yeah, every time I do that to myself though, I look at it and I go, oh gosh, like I wish I would have known this or that. And then, you know, most of the time I look at the work and I'm like, oh my gosh, like my respect for the, you know, the creative process just escalates because I'm like, I had no idea that's what they were going to do with that or, you know, but then I do the hindsight thing where I'm like, oh,
because you never know how they're going to cut it together.
And that it was going to turn out like that. If I had done this or that would have been really impactful.
Right.
Or, so I think what it's really taught me is to not hold back. I think so many times I've held back where I've tried to, you know, exactly maybe stick to the words of the script verbatim or something. And some of the best moments, I think, are improv.
I was actually just about to ask that. Do you ever, like, when you first meet with a director, will you always just kind of, like, go to them and sort of, like, will want to collaborate? Or, like, are they kind of always kind of, like... Have you ever had a director say, nope, you have to stick to every single word on the page, the page is gospel and all that, or the page is the Bible? Do you kind of maybe prefer maybe working with the director and say, okay, maybe you don't have to say it exactly this way, but, you know, you can kind of improv it and change it up a little bit?
Yeah, just like I mentioned, managers over the years or bosses over the years, everyone kind of has their own style.
Yeah.
So I like to have that discussion with the director because I want to respect their vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to play a little piece of like helping that come together. So I do have that conversation with them. I talk about character background and wardrobe and kind of overall, you know, goals for the character. And some of them say, she's yours. Develop her. Wardrobe is on you. Like, just take it and own it. And it doesn't have to be verbatim off the script, and some of them are more, you know, hands-on.
You have to stick with the,
So, you know, I really respect both styles. I think that you just have to be flexible.
Just kind of learn to adapt to both.
You have to be flexible and be able to just meet the needs.
No, sorry, I like to improv.
No, sorry, I like to do my own thing. Yeah, well, you probably won't get a lot of work that way. But, so really to me it doesn't matter, but I do like working with different directors so I can see their different styles.
Right.
And then especially when you work with them again, then you really know what to expect on set. And I think that it makes it, you know, a little bit easier.
Because you have that shorthand, right? Because you have that shorthand because you know that the way that they work and you know that,
The thing that's tricky, though, is if someone says, yes, you know, if you feel like it's more comfortable to say it this way or that way, and, you know, or you just kind of go for it and do something kind of a little bit different when you're filming. If you do multiple takes, which you typically do, and the multiple angles and over the shoulders, and, you know, you have to do it the same way because it makes editing's job a lot easier. You know, if you do it different every time, then they're going to have a hard time in editing.
That's a good point.
And that's, again, just learning different people's jobs and making sure that I'm doing my part to make their job as easy as possible. So it's a good learning point.
Yeah.
You know,
you're always learning. Yeah.
Yeah. When you come in, if you come in and just act like, you know, you're in a box and you're just doing your own thing and you're coming in and then leaving, I just don't think it's a...
That feels like a 9-to-5, you know, just check in every day, you know? And it doesn't feel fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that it helps get you respected. You know, I would like to think that I have a respected, you know, reputation around here that, you know, I'm on time and I, you know my lines and
I'm so glad you said like that you always show up early to places because I have that same thing. Like I always want to show up like, but I also have that thing about like, okay, if I show up too early, do I seem eager? Like
it's always appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah. If
it's just this constant battle in my head.
I'm always about a half hour early for
me
call
too,
time
yeah.
at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes earlier than
that. I always like to be.
Yeah. because, you know, just in case, you never know what's going to happen. And then again, you know, I look at the production, the, you know, the work that's involved. And if they're looking around, you know, for one of their leads, mm-hmm. she's nowhere to be found. You know, if I'm sitting there attentive, ready to go, then I think that they'll be, you know, put their mind at ease a little bit. It's one less right. thing to worry about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I try to be, you know, and helpful too on set. You know, if somebody needs something or, you know, needs to run to the store for something or whatever, and I'm available and sitting there, I'll jump in the car and run to the store. You know, just, you know, I just want to be a team player and, mm-hmm. and,
Yeah, I'd have like multiple different jobs on
yeah,
set. Yeah,
yeah, especially the mm-hmm. indie films. You
yeah,
know,
especially
now
the smaller micro budget films.
Yeah, someone for Bad Boys 3 is not going to expect me to run to the store. But, you know, but yeah, it is just different. The different, you know, how the different productions, the different budgets, how they're ran. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I like to be on a wide variety.
That's interesting mm-hmm. too. Yeah, I think for me, like, obviously, you know, from working as a, because I for a long time was a production assistant and I worked on a lot of different things in the area. And I, you know, it was great experience. Mm-hmm. I liked working on the bigger, I liked it, not like super big like Bad Boys or anything uh-huh. like that. But I, you know, like I said, I worked on the Zac Efron one and all that. Mm-hmm. And I almost kind of prefer working in a micro budget indie level. Mm-hmm. That's just personally for me, because like we were saying earlier, you get to know everybody more. And also just, you know, it's not as sort of intimidating, mm-hmm. you know, if that makes any yeah. sense. Like, obviously, you know, if you're on a set, you obviously have, for any, whether it's big budget or indie, you always have to be on your game. Mm-hmm. But it's not as, like, it just feels like we're all just making, like, short films. It's like, you know, just, like, kind of doing this all together and kind of making things up as we right. go along.
Yeah, and sometimes that's the case. Yeah, like on Bad Boys 3, I mean, you know, listen to things about safety and this and that. I mean,
right.
it's so,
right.
it's literally.
With a big budget film like that, obviously, there's mm-hmm. a lot more.
And there's a lot of insurance yeah. concerns. And mm-hmm. And then, you know, on some of the big ones, I don't know. I feel like I always get into films where there's gunfire or I get killed or something always happens. But just, you know, earplug safety. You know,
oh, right.
Like on 10
yeah.
Minutes Gone. You know,
especially if like Bad Boys, where you have like big explosions
yeah,
happening all over
the
place.
There were some shots.
Yeah.
And they really pay attention to, does everyone have their earplugs in? Do you know how to use them? Who needs earplugs? You know, just all of the kind of extra safety precautions that they take. So you really have to, you know, watch out and watch what you're doing. And
And
stay alert. You know, mm-hmm. there might be a camera whizzing by you or something, mm-hmm. And so you do have to stay on your toes a little bit
oh,
more,
yeah, for sure,
from a professional level. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
and obviously there's so many more people involved too,
because
you're dealing with, you know, a lot of people on set, but there's probably also people from the studio that's paying for it and all that.
Oh, it's crazy!
Yeah.
Like Bad Boys 3, I mean, there were cameras everywhere. There was a camera in the pool. There was a camera boom above your head. I mean, there
right.
are people
mm-hmm.
everywhere, things moving everywhere. And, you know, I just had to make sure on my part where I ran to, mm-hmm. you know, when some excitement happened, I just had to make sure that I wasn't running into someone or running into a camera, you know, mm-hmm. camera person's path or... so yeah, there's a lot that
you're tripping on a wire somewhere.
Exactly. Oh yeah. I mean, it's just, there's stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. So
I haven't had an experience where I've been on something as huge as that. Uh-huh. But I mean, the biggest thing was the Zac Efron one, but even that was kind mm-hmm. of a smaller film. That,
yeah. Yeah. I just think you have to do your part.
Oh yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then sometimes if there's, you know, background or someone on set that I'm with, you know, who hasn't done it before or mm-hmm. whatever, I try to, you know,
try to coach them and sort of
yeah,
say, like,
you know,
hey, you know,
I'm
this is
like
what it's like. Maybe
bossy,
take them under,
but, you know, if I see, like,
take them under your wing or something like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the type of person that I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm pretty, I have a
pretty like you can big spot
heart.
Someone who looks
like
scared.
I can spot
you know,
someone who looks scared.
Or has no idea what they're doing.
He's maybe about to get in trouble for doing something, so I can.
Or maybe get in trouble for sitting around.
Because
that's one thing. Because that's one thing that people always say. Like, dude, if you're working as a PA or something like that, or just any like crew member, like you cannot sit around.
Maybe there's background.
Or wait for some. Or I can't wait for someone to wait for someone to give you a job.
Or sometimes there's a background person sitting around who's not happy about it. You're like, guess what? Yeah. It's part of it. Like,
exactly. There's a lot of waiting around.
There is a lot.
You know,
of waiting.
Because they're going to be setting up different camera shots and
right. So I try to, I just try to be a good person. You know, if someone looks lost or they're, you know, struggling.
Well, that's
a little
good
bit,
because
I
feel like maybe a lot of people on those bigger sets don't really, you know, maybe they can kind of see through the person and maybe kind of not bully. Bully's not the right word, but maybe like kind of like sort of talk down to them a little bit.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. I mean, I just think that everyone, again, it's a creative process and everyone has a part in it.
Absolutely.
You know, so I just respect everyone, try to help out when I can, and, you know, do my part. Like, if I know that there's, I don't know, some voiceover or something that didn't get shot, you know, I'm going to speak up and say, hey, we haven't done my piece yet, or if I'm being released, but I know that I shouldn't, you know, I'm going to try to speak up and make sure that, you know, continuity is being followed and that, you know, I'm doing my piece. I know, a trigger word, right?
Continuity is such...
Well, I'll tell you what.
Oh, my God. I've worked on so many things where we just don't even think about that.
Yes. Yes. Well,
and then all of a sudden, we're shooting a scene in a car, and there's a coat hanger that's hanging from the... Yeah.
Like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Like, why didn't we notice that was
my God,
there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't like to do... I mean, obviously, reshoots happen. Obviously, you don't have to. I don't particularly... I mean... I'll do it if I have to, but obviously you never know if the same people are going to be around on certain days, and I feel like it can kind of like push back the process a little
bit. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like you have certain people for 3 days, have certain people for a weekend, and then
And you schedule everything.
We schedule everything, and then all of a sudden, and then all of a sudden, oh, there's a coffee cup, like the Game of Thrones thing.
Like, you're like, we don't have that budget to pay Game of Thrones to use their...
But obviously, I think with Game of Thrones, I mean, they could have, I mean, with the... big budgets that they have with HBO and everything. I feel like they could have easily in the post-production just kind of like, okay, maybe we can kind of scrap that up a little bit.
Yeah, do something. If you can fix it, great. But if it's just correct to begin with, that's even better.
Yes.
You know, so I try to...
But there's so many things you just don't think about when you're... Because you're so focused on like your one main issue that you're not...
Right. I try to at least do a good part on my own continuity. You know, how did I have that bottle sitting there? How did I, you know, how was my, you know, my shirt? Or how was my jacket? Was the string out? Was it, you know, on my hoodie? Was the string out? Was it in? Was it, you know, it's like I try to pay attention to things. But, man, sometimes, well, now, sometimes it's ruined it for me in watching movies or shows.
I'm exactly the same way. I just analyze things way too much now.
Like House of Cards. Like when I was like, it was a coffee cup. I think there was a coffee cup. Now it's gone. Now it's there and now it's gone. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Like my family and friends are like so annoyed with me. Like they never want to watch movies with me anymore because I'm like so quick to analyze things.
Right. You know? I know. And that's the downfall. Because you can't watch the same way.
Yeah.
Like you used to. Mm-hmm. But pretty much every time I see something then I'm watching for more. You know?
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
I was watching Rain on Netflix in like a girl's hair.
Okay.
Like over the shoulder shot.
Right.
It was one way. And in front of her it was another way. I'm like, oh, there it goes. It's all ruined for me now. I was watching a show with the kids over the holiday, and it was a girl, God bless her, she's some dog show, and she's got a jacket on, like a medical jacket, and all of a sudden I see something, and I'm like, stop it, and we had to like push it back. It was an ant. An ant crawled up her getting around her back. She's just talking away. And they just filmed it. And this aunt.
And they didn't even.
I was like, oh gosh. Like little things.
And it's so funny because I was talking about the Game of Thrones cup. I wouldn't have even noticed that until social media pointed out that there was a coffee cup there. Like, when I watched that episode, I had no idea it was there. But then all of a sudden, the next day, it's like, oh, well, there's a coffee cup sitting there. But, yeah, I would have had, I mean, that's, granted, that's such a kind of smaller detail rather than something that's, like, blatantly obvious. Yeah. Like, you were saying, like, an ant or a bug crawling up the shoulder.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And then sometimes, like, when we filmed the 48-hour, we were doing a night scene outside in a hot tub. It's called Joan LaFemme's Vacation.
Okay.
So, well, the sun started to come up, and the birds started chirping.
Oh,
and we were
no.
like, oh, shut up! And we were, like, throwing things in a tree, trying to get these knocking birds.
Oh, so you caught it when
it.
You were there.
So we were catching it
not
when
caught
we were there.
Not catching when you're in post-production.
But we're like, okay, now... what are we going to do to solve this? Because, you know, we expected the sun, but not the birds. We had, like, a few more, short minutes left before the sun came. But I'm like, oh, my gosh, we got to try to get rid of these birds before.
Just keep
so we did. We just
stuff.
Threw stuff in the tree. And,
oh, that's funny.
So it is funny. Different things that happen.
But
on
it's
the
all
set.
Part of the process.
It really
you know,
is.
It's all part of the fun of
yeah.
it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes it fun. And now we laugh. Yeah. Like, oh, my gosh, remember this or that. Well, the 48-hour we filmed at my house. So literally,
that's one thing that you have to do if you're working on a micro budget level.
You have to literally
your house, your friend's house.
There was bodies
yeah,
everywhere.
House, yeah.
Just, I mean, we probably slept like I don't know, maybe a few hours or whatever. And so, the lead male, Dave is Dave Moak is his name.
Oh, he, Dave Moak. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, small world. Oh. Well, we actually dressed him up. And he had on, like, a bra and panties. And, I mean, if you knew Dave, like, this is not his typical right. film. Mm-hmm. But our neighbors were outside in Solim, and there's all these cars. And so what looks like, you know, a gentleman in a bra and panties, kitty cat panties in front of my house and cameras everywhere and... but we laugh now. Like, remember the neighbors? Well, the neighbors put a for sale sign in their yard, like,
right.
not too long after that. But
when we worked on, well, I had this one experience where I was peeing on this commercial.
Uh-huh.
And we were filming in, like, this little suburb where, like, the houses, it was, like, this newly built suburb.
I'm assuming you were supposed to be?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, not just for fun.
No, right. Yeah. But it was, you know, it was a newly renovated neighborhood. Like, all the houses were up for sale. I mean, there was a few people that were there, but we were filming really late at night, and it was an outside shot. And this family comes pulling up right behind us. All of a sudden, while we're shooting something, their car horn just starts, like, vroom out all over the place.
Oh, my gosh.
And then once that happened and that stopped, they got out of the car, and the dad actually started yelling, "Hey, what are you doing?" As we're filming this, it's like, wait, what are you doing? We didn't sign up for this. And
oh,
I was like,
gosh.
Well, I'm pretty sure that our producers cleared everything saying that we were going to be filming
oh,
on these two
God.
Nights. And he's like, well, I didn't hear anything.
Oh, gosh. Is that funny? Why are you peeing in my
It wasn't their house.
Oh,
it wasn't their. It was one of those, like, smaller houses that was, like, right, like, because we were filming in, like, the back patio area, and there was, like, a section of houses that were right behind, and they pulled up, like, literally right there, like, right in our shot, and we didn't even think about that.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, you definitely have to have understanding neighbors if you're shooting indie films at your house.
I mean, I, for the most part, as, you know, I haven't had too many experiences where someone has just been a total, like, jerk. A lot
yeah.
of people, like, you clear it with people, and they understand what you're doing, and
uh-huh.
it's all fine and good. You
yeah,
know?
I probably should have done that with my neighbor.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't.
Oh.
I also didn't know that we would be dressing Dave up in a bra and panties in my front yard.
Oh, and they're
so,
probably just
know.
They're probably just looking around going,
I don't know. So much crazy goes on at my
what
house
is
anymore.
Happening in Andy's
I just
house.
Think that they just roll their eyes and are like, yep, she's up to something again. It's always something. So
right, yeah.
I thought kids were breaking into my dad's car one night.
Oh, no.
He was staying with me overnight and I went chasing him in my underwear.
I think, you know what? I think when we met, you were telling
that
the
I
story.
Just oh.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really? Here, he just forgot to close his car door and his car was trashed.
Right.
In advance. But I thought that it was being broken into.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, here I am
again. But you weren't filming something.
Oh, no.
That
no.
was just a, yeah.
No, I was just a, that's just a typical night. There she is, chasing these poor kids down the street in her underwear at 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, no. Oh gosh. Yeah. It's constant. It's constantly something.
Yeah.
When we were on the set of The Wager, I drove this old car. They found this car in a field in mud, and somebody took it to a car show, and they were just showing it off before it was restored.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess somebody who was looking for some cars for The Wager happened to stumble across it and said, how quick can you get that running? And so right. I was sitting in the driver's seat within, I guess, a couple weeks from the time it was taken from this field. And it was, again, it was just one of those experiences. It's late at night. I'm trying to drive this car. The throttle is up so high I could barely keep it from taking off by mm-hmm. itself because it was going to stall.
Right.
And it was just rusted and leaking. Oh. And I'm driving at night and the little, you know, the little tiny windshield wipers. And it was right. a 1972 Chevy Nova.
Oh, my God.
And, it was terrible. And all my might, I mean, you know. I'm not a super huge girl, so I have all my weight on the brake trying to keep this car from going, and my heart is racing. And guy in the back, his foot went through the floor. It was so rusted.
Like it literally just, literally like, he just like put his foot
in a puddle. My God. Thank God we were stopped. Oh my God. But yeah,
his foot went straight. That would have been so terrible if you were like driving it and his whole street's like dangling. Oh my God.
That would have been awful. Yeah, we were stopped and we were in park and he was going to, I don't know, get in or out and his foot went straight through the floor into a puddle. And
yikes.
So it was one of those onset things I will never forget.
Yeah, we all have those experiences, right? We all have those experiences that we're never, that's how you know it's a good shoot, right? Because everybody's going to have those stories.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. Yeah. He was so embarrassed at the time. And again, like you said, I was just so thankful I wasn't driving because, so that was a great experience. And so that should be a good one. We'll see a lot of a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went through that one. So
right,
yeah.
And that one was The Wager, you said.
That's
too,
The Wager. Okay. Yes, Mark Justice directed that.
Okay.
That was his directorial debut. So and Jim Gloyd, he's a part of it. So
have you ever had any aspirations to write or direct? Have you ever had any ideas that you kind of wanted to make happen?
I have ideas all the time. I have a note. In my phone, and I just keep adding to it for different skit ideas or movie ideas, or maybe I'll have a dream and I'll wake up and write it down. Definitely. I definitely want to direct. I definitely want to produce some more.
Mm-hmm.
I go to Hilton Head quite a bit, and so I'm talking to a team right now about taking a crew down there, filming something down there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as writing, I think that I'm probably pretty good at coming up with the ideas, but I don't know how great I would be at actually writing it. Like, I have a great...
You have a good story idea, but maybe you give it to... Like, maybe you give it to a few screenwriters, and then they'll maybe turn it into,
exactly.
turn it into something.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I've never been... I mean... I would take screenwriting classes and things like that, but I'm the same way. Like, I always just, like, I'm not good at, like, kind of maybe structuring the script in a plot, in a great way. Right. So I would always, like, would want to take a story and just, like, kind of work with some friends of mine who were screenwriters. Like, I mean, I did a lot more in high school than I did kind of, like, I was more involved in, like, more of the production when I got out. But, like, in high school, you know, you make, like, short films with your friends and stuff like that. But I would just always, you know... take it to like a few friends of mine and say, okay, how do we work this into, you know?
Yeah, or maybe like help develop it.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
sure.
Take something. And I love that creative process, but I have the utmost respect for someone who has the, I guess maybe the patience to sit down and, like you said, put all the text down and bring it to life that way and make it form a story that actually makes sense and has closure and ups and downs. And I just don't think that I'm cut out for that. I'll play in my own backyard. So, but as far as directing and helping to develop scripts and the you know, producing standpoint, mm-hmm. I'm super excited about new projects moving forward.
And, that's awesome. And being able to expand. Looks like you have a lot that you're in development right now.
Yeah, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. Some of it shows up on IMDb. Some of it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Again, some of it I forget about sometimes, you know, like I mentioned, mm-hmm. things that I'll work on. But, there's a lot coming up. I just filmed a...
I was about to ask, kind of wrap things up a little bit, if you had any last-minute things you wanted to plug.
Yeah, well, I just finished filming Ride or Die. Chris Ingram, he's a local director. Mm-hmm. He did a fantastic job on this short. He's putting together a bunch of shorts, and he is going to take them to some film festivals and see about, you know, getting those made. And so I just wrapped that last weekend and going to start focusing on the winter film for the month of February.
Yeah.
And then
I've had a few friends that actually want me to be an extra in their winter film.
Well, so. I might grab you to be something more than an extra. I want to surround myself with the past, and you're one of them. So, and then
very cool.
And then I'll film with William Lee on his third film in March.
Right.
So, yeah, that's called Black Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming up, and I just had some new pictures taken, so I'll be posting some updated pictures and doing the workshop this weekend, the monologue workshop with Kirk Balt. So
very cool.
Yeah, so I'm keeping busy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. All right, Andy, thank you so much for coming in and being a guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to maybe doing something with you in the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Creators in Cincy. And as always, good night.